The Kinky Cocktail Hour is brought to you by Motor Bunny, the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator that offers fabulous creative sexual experiences. We use it and it rotates, it vibrates, and it delivers mind-blowing orgasms. Enjoy Motor Bunny as your favorite sex toy. When you order the Motor Bunny, multiple attachments are included along with the Link controller, which allows wireless control from anywhere. Motor Bunny is the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator on Earth. Use the link in the show notes and spice up your sex life with a Motor Bunny. You're listening to Kinky Cocktail Hour, a conversation between adults about sex-forward relationships, kinky lifestyles, and frank communication. If you're under 18, please stop listening and visit scarletteen.com. Hi, this is Lady Petra.
I'm Safa Master.
And this is Kinky Cocktail Hour.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So, what are you drinking today?
We are drinking some rosés.
So,
one of them is a Chateau Saint Michel 2018. It's from Columbia Valley. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is Bernard Griffin, a 2019 Rose of Sangiovese. Mm-hmm. And looks like this is also Columbia Valley. So we're going to try the Bernard Griffin first.
And now we're having a spring salad for dinner.
Yeah.
So think about that as we...
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Very fruity nose, this one.
Yeah, you smell that? Wow, really fruity.
Good legs. Nice and smooth.
Yeah, it's got really good legs, actually.
Yeah. Delightful spring wine. Yeah.
That's nice and light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, and it's not, yeah, it's balanced. It's fruity.
Yeah, perfect for
but not like sickening sweet or anything like that. It's very light.
No, it's great for like a spring afternoon, like in the sun.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right.
I like that one. Okay.
I'm a yes on that.
I like that one. Now we're going to try the rosé, which is the Chateau Saint Michel. It's a little, it appears to be a little lighter in color.
Yeah, much lighter.
Yeah, more of a pastel pink, and that was more of a Sangiovese red. So that's like a...
The first one was a rosé of Sangiovese.
Yeah, so it's more, it was a deeper red. This is much more almost salmon colored.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but not like dark salmon meat, like light salmon meat.
Yeah, it looks delightful. Let's taste. Let's have a nose.
Okay. There's fruits and other things in there. I can't.
It's got a much softer nose, much less.
It's not as fruity, but there's something else besides just the fruit I'm smelling. It's kind of an earthy smell. Ooh, different, but.
I like
the legs
too.
On that.
It's got
God.
Great legs. Much sweeter.
It is much sweeter.
But it's also incredibly smooth.
But light.
Super light.
So it's like sweet but light. You could easily drink this.
I think if I were to guess between the two, which would be better with salad, I think this rosé would be the...
This might be good with the salad based on if you know the dressing and that kind of thing. I think that would be good. Okay, so save this one for the salad.
Yep.
And we'll have the Bernard. During our podcast.
Okay, so we watched Milk last night.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Now, if you don't know about Harvey Milk,
yeah,
it's a movie you should watch.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just a quick summary. So Harvey Milk was one of the probably most important advocates and activists in the gay political movement of the late 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was so much about that movie that was brilliant. First of all, Sean Penn was brilliant.
Wait, he won an Academy Award.
He won the Best Actor Academy Award. Yeah. He was brilliant.
Deservedly so.
It was.
And the cast in that film was amazing.
There were two parts about the cast that were amazing. First of all, there was a bunch of amazing actors. But secondly... Yeah. They looked very much like the real characters they were playing.
Yeah, when we went back and looked at Wikipedia and looked back and forth, as well as at the end of the movie, they showed the side-by-sides.
Yeah.
But I actually did some looking on Wikipedia, and the I think it is it Don White or Dan White,
Dan
the one
White,
that
I think,
assassinated
yeah.
them.
Yeah, Dan White.
The picture of him against James Brolin.
Yeah,
it's kind of scary.
Really,
it's uncanny.
Yeah, well, I mean, the story is an interesting story because first of all, it takes place at a really interesting time in American politics. Mm-hmm. It's a time when the Christian right is beginning to gain their political power mm-hmm. through what was her name? Phyllis Diller? No.
Who are you thinking of? Diane Feinstein?
No, not Diane Feinstein. The political right. The person who was in charge of the Christian right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Can't remember her name right now. Come back to me.
Yeah. She had Diana something or something like that.
Anyway.
Gar or something like
it'll
that.
It'll come back to me. But anyway, the Christian right's sort of starting to gain traction.
Yeah.
And they're starting to flex their political muscle. And the opportunity for there to be something of significance happening in the gay political movement hasn't yet materialized. And so what was really amazing for me was he has this guy, he's 40 years old, and his sort of defining concern about himself is that he's done nothing of substance in his life.
And he didn't come out.
And he hadn't come out.
Until 40.
Right. Yeah.
Like, literally, I read a whole bunch about him, and he was, he was in the gay scene, but very privately.
Yeah.
It was, you know, in the closeted. And he had considered at one point earlier of marrying a friend of his who was lesbian so that they could both have a front to stay out of each other's way.
Gotcha.
And go to Florida. Which I can only imagine how desperate you are to, like, try to have a life.
Yeah.
You know, you're closeted, so you're trying to have a life.
Yeah.
You know, it's still be who you are, even if it's behind closed doors, right?
Yeah.
And so then he had met some people he was interested in. But he was like, you know, he went to school and was a mathematician, and so he was an actuary at an
insurance
company.
Yeah.
And he just kind of, like you say, when he says he got there in San Francisco and he was claiming that he hadn't done anything, like he really had not found his calling. And later his campaign manager,
the
woman that he brought in,
yeah,
she spoke to him and said, you know, he was lost for so long. And then what he found was he was really, truly a politician. That's
yeah.
what he was.
Well, I think there are two things that really stood out for me about his political activism.
Mm-hmm.
The first was that he wasn't anybody in the world of politics. And he started to create community.
Well, he's fearless.
But he started to create community. They opened their photography store,
yep.
and he started to create community on the street and started mm-hmm. to attract and bring sort of the San Francisco gay community into his store, and that sort of helped the store owners around him. And little by little,
fighting the basic, you know, the neighborhood association. So he just
yeah.
said, "Screw it! I'll just create my own gay association,
mm-hmm.
and we'll only frequent gay friendly or gay businesses."
Right.
So, I mean, he didn't look at any of those. I mean, he didn't obviously want the headbutting to happen,
right.
but whenever it happened, he just figured out a new solution and just dealt with
it. Well, what he did was he just kept taking on more and more of the leadership mantle
mm-hmm.
until eventually he became a candidate for office.
Yeah.
And when he eventually ran for office and he lost and then he ran again, you know, when they ran on a political issue about choice of some sort, like the school and politics of school and so forth, there was like a statewide referendum. I think it was referendum 6, and they won that going away.
Mm-hmm.
And it really sort of put him against the Christian movement. But it did it. It just sort of catapulted him into this stratosphere of political activism.
Look at how many times he ran too. I think it was like 3 times
yeah.
before. And Marsconi, I think the mayor,
mm-hmm.
actually, he really liked
Milk. Yeah.
He actually on the night that he won the mayor position, he actually went to Milk and thanked him for his support. And earlier he had fought in the legislature something, the anti-sodomy
right.
law. So he had an affinity for the movement.
Mm.
And, you know, Milk runs 3 times, just 3 tons of charm or whatever it was yeah. first time. But he's the first openly gay political, like, city government official in San Francisco. I mean, or right. or anywhere, I, for that matter. I don't really have the data on that. But
yeah.
one of the things I did find her name is his
campaign
manager was Anne Cronenberg, and she was his final one, the one he won with.
Yeah.
And she said this, and this is telling, this speaks to what we deal with in our journey, that's why I'm bringing yeah. it up. I said, what set Harvey apart from me, you and me, was that he was a visionary.
Yeah.
He imagined a righteous world inside his head, and then he set about to create it for real, for all of us. And that's what we talk about all the time, is yeah. we
living into
see
a possibility.
Possibility, and then you make it a reality by being in action, which he was, to
right.
create that. And get, and then he enrolled all these people.
Right.
in what he was up to
right.
and then registered them
yeah.
in his vision.
And created...
And then they saw it because they wanted to do it because they saw it. You know what I mean? It
right.
just, it's just so amazing.
Yeah, and in the end, so it took about 10 years. I think 78 was when he died.
Yeah, in
and,
November.
And so it took about 8 or 9 years before...
Because he died at 48, so it was about...
Yeah, about 8 years or so. But it, you know, what had happened was he had engineered like massive acceptance of the gay community in San Francisco and more extensively in California and more extensively in the United States. So yeah. he was like an amazing voice for the gay community. And
well,
then when he was murdered by the opposing Republican congressman who was part of the, not congressman, but House.
The supervisor.
Supervisor who was... part of the Christian right movement.
Well, what I found, when I read the movie didn't tell you exactly what happened, but basically
yeah.
what happened is there and the movie got into more of the interpersonal relationship of Milk and Dan, whether that's a poetic license or if that was real, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know. However, in when I read about the history of it, basically it alludes that he decided to leave the supervisor position because it wasn't paying enough to start a business.
Dan White,
he
yeah.
put in his resignation,
right.
and then he immediately tried to rescind it.
Yeah.
But the mayor would not reappoint him after he rescinded it. He said, "That's it. You've chosen a different path." And then that's when he was going to try to kill 4 people. There was actually a woman, Carrie something, one of the supervisors. It would have been 2 supervisors: Willie something, I don't know his name, but other than Willie, and Carrie something, Marsconi, and Milk. Milk wasn't his first person to go after, although Milk was the first person he interacted. He made a big deal about, he thought Carrie was the, she was the mastermind.
Behind keeping him getting a seat back.
Whatever. The way it's written, it makes him sound paranoid, obviously.
Yeah.
And of course, Dan was sentenced to 7 years. It was not even first, it was like manslaughter, second degree manslaughter. And he got out in 5, and then within 2 years, he committed suicide.
Right. So the story occurs, and it sort of precedes the development of the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
And a lot of the sort of coming of age of the gay community happened in that sort of 70 to 78 period.
Yeah.
78 to, you know, 84 was when the AIDS crisis sort of
right.
occurred.
Right, and that's why we didn't have a lot. There wasn't like, they weren't talking about AIDS.
No, not at all.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, but actually a lot of the people who were characters in the film,
yeah,
you know, not the actors, but the actual
people
died of AIDS.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And so, you know, you have to get like the whole experience of, you know, just what an impact Harvey Milk made for the gay community. And then that impact led to the sort of activism that led to the dealing with the AIDS crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out of his experience. At the same time, the Christian right movement was accelerating at that time. Ronald Reagan got elected. You had the quote-unquote moral majority. And then they took on gay marriage and abortion as their two
mm-hmm.
sort of...
And I didn't know,
cause
until I read it,
yeah.
after Marsconi left, Feinstein came in.
Yeah.
That was her vehicle to get into politics,
right.
which led her to the state, you know.
Mm.
And so what was interesting when he said, "I haven't done anything."
Right.
I mean, if you read his history before, he was, you know, he went to college, right? He served in the Navy, was a lieutenant in the Navy, was a dive instructor. in the Navy. Was, I think it said he was at Vietnam. So he did some significant things. And then, of course, posthumously, I can't say the word, but he was received the Presidential
Medal
of Freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, of course he should. You know, and it was
right.
A year after his, after the movie was out. So it's 2009, I think, is when they awarded it.
Right.
Because the movie was not the first movie. They did a movie in 84 called The Times of Harvey Milk.
Well, that was more of a documentary.
You're right. And it won some little tiny awards, but it did not get the draw. It was too close in AIDS and HIV during 84 for people to get
the significance of it.
Yeah, it wasn't hitting it yet.
But it's also probably more accurate than this, which is a Hollywood film.
Yeah.
It's probably a little bit more accurate because it tracks his timeline more specifically. I think what I want to speak to is, you know, if you see something that you want to change and you look around, you can go, well, I can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. And what he proved is, like, you can. Like, he's the one. Like, he made the choice to act on his ideas and be in action, and by being in action, he enrolled people in what he was up to.
Well, and he was extremely charismatic.
Yeah.
People who found out later, people on the East Coast who didn't really know what he was up to, even though he was on national news, but probably, people get their head in the sand, they don't pay attention to everything, and so they had no idea he was gay, and they were like, he's a man's man, which is so typical of a closeted person trying to decide where they go. And then when he figured it out finally and ended up in an area that had an actual community where he could have a direct impact and have that community right there to support him, even though they were horribly discriminated against.
Sure.
It still was better than being isolated, because he felt very isolated on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Extremely.
Yeah.
And that's not to say there weren't gays. There were tons of gays there, but the reality is, in the environment he was closeted.
Right, right. Yeah. No, it was a very important role that he played in being a stand for gay rights. And from his point of view, it wasn't just gay rights, it was human rights, you know?
Well, and that's what he would say a lot. You'd hear him speak to, you know, black, brown, yellow, green, whatever, and women and men. Because, again, initially, this was all focused on this gay movement. And I always sat there when I'm sitting here watching the movie thinking to myself, well, what about the lesbians?
Right.
Because I know they're involved, because obviously as campaign manager, right? And I think they were involved heavily. So it's always one of those things. But I think in society, this is what I think. Society had much more of a taboo on gay existence orientation than they did lesbian.
Right.
I just think they did, because I think vanilla men often go, I'd love to have two women together. That'd be great.
Right.
I mean, that's just a thing. And so it doesn't mean it's not taboo, but it means it's like, shh, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But with men, it's like, no, that's not heard of. We can't do that, you know.
Yeah.
It's just fear. People living in fear.
Definitely. Now, I loved the movie. I thought it was brilliant. I thought the acting was outstanding.
Yeah, and as a, you don't expect it to be completely accurate, but as a historical-based film that's entertaining, it's an entertaining film.
Right.
It was very fascinating. It made me want to look up more stuff and learn more things about that time.
Yeah.
Because I was only like 8 or 10 during that time.
Sure.
So, you know, I was like a kid.
Yeah, I arrived in this country in 77. And I remember in 78, there was a lot of noise about Harvey Milk being murdered.
Yeah, because he got elected.
But I didn't understand what it was about.
He'd only been in office like 11 months before he was assassinated.
I had no idea. I was in Seattle, they were in San Francisco. I had no idea.
Right.
And I really was, you know, just trying to get used to American news, you know.
Exactly.
It just bothered me that there was no international news in the American newspapers.
Curious.
Yeah.
To ask you this, since you're coming from a different country and you were younger there, but I'm sure you were aware at some level. What was it like, or do you have any idea of the gay community in South Africa?
South Africa was as sexist as it was racist.
Okay.
So there wasn't any out gay anything.
So you wouldn't openly see it, but you might have an idea
amongst
that someone
amongst
is.
The black community, there was more out. There were more out individuals, you know. It wasn't like
within the black community.
Yeah, like you would see men holding hands and that sort of thing, but there wasn't like a sort of public community.
like not gay bars or things like that.
No, you know, that kind of, not even.
But I'm just, you know, I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Like where they were at in that process.
Yeah, South Africa was backwards. You know, this is now 40 years later.
I know. Can right? you believe it? Wow.
And in those 40 years, we've seen a massive shift in the sort of cultural context of gay America.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have way more acceptance of gay marriage, of domestic partnerships.
I think that's true on mostly on the coastal parts of our country.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like in the inland.
I don't know what it's like.
But the national zeitgeist is that, you know, gay politics is accepted, lesbians, gay, bisexual, queer,
right.
And you know, it's not like there's no discrimination. There's still tons of discrimination.
Totally.
But it's like we're 40 years along that path in that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem as daunting of a task to get over the finish line for total acceptance than it once did.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For one thing, you know, the argument against gay marriage has been lost by the right.
Totally.
And they're not picking up the mantle again.
Well, it won't go backwards.
They're not. No.
There's no way. And the reality is that forged the way for everyone else, really, who are partners but choose not to get married of any orientation. Just flat out, it was a way that the moral majority put a thumb hold and on everyone else. And that comes down to health care. It comes down to decisions about your life in end of life moments, those kinds of things.
Sure.
Who's seen decisions about post when someone's passed. All of those should go to whoever you want. It doesn't have to be even a partner. It could just be, I wrote your name on a paper and that's what you are.
And we're seeing now the Christian right moving their target to abortion. And so that's where the current battle is. And then of course you've got the white power community sort of doing everything they can to inhibit black people from voting.
And even with the Confederate flag issues that have been coming up lately.
I saw today that NASCAR is going to not allow the Stars and Bars,
which will be interesting. Right? They'll not allow it. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the stands,
mm-hmm.
even if people have to get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not for that at all. I think the flag is ridiculous.
It's a flag of traitors,
It's not even traitors, too. It's a racist flag.
It's racist. I agree.
It always drives me bananas when you see the stereotypical lifted truck
right.
with two huge flagpoles sticking out of the holes in the back of the bed with an American flag and a Confederate flag on it. And I'm like, what an idiot. I mean, just a complete idiot.
Right. Yeah, and you can be sure that in addition to being racist and sexist, they're also homophobes. You know, so the thing is, a lot of the homophobes are also homosexual anyway, closeted.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reality is.
And that's a shrinking community in this country, it seems, over time.
I want to say it is. Yeah. I just think we don't, just much like, well, this is my feeling, much like COVID-19, how we really don't know how many people are dying because mm-hmm. the codes on how they label people's death certificates are off.
Mm-hmm.
We're not getting correct data. We can't trust the CDC right now. I mean, mm-hmm. basically, right? And we'll never really know, right? Okay. So that one thing is being watched more than anything right now because that could involve everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But statistics like racism, which doesn't involve everyone.
No, and homophobia.
And it's closeted.
Yeah.
Right? Because people are closeted racists.
Yeah.
It's scary.
No, I agree.
I don't know how many are out there.
There is... this is my view. My view is that, you know, the arc of history bends towards justice.
Mm-hmm.
And in 40 years, we've seen for the gay, lesbian, queer, bisexual, and trans community, we've seen a movement in the right direction
mm-hmm.
to where people are coming out, you know, openly as their identity, they're defining their pronouns, they're, you know, being accepted by the broad community, and there are people still, although they seem fewer, who are, you know, bigots and who will discriminate. And it's just incumbent upon us as, you know, citizens to not stand for that. We just can't stand for it.
What's so, you know, and no, I'm just not the normal person, but what I hate so badly about all of this is, you know, if you just look at humans, whatever color they are, whatever right. gender they are, whatever shape they are, whatever,
right.
we make meaning in everything. So we see something and we immediately, from whatever our context is, we make all this meaning and make a judgment right away.
Right.
Before we know anything about the person or anything, right?
Right.
But for me, we're all just in these vessels. You just happen to get your vessel. I got right. my vessel. I didn't get to choose my vessel. My no. soul was, or my entity was just put into this.
Right.
And my consciousness is here. I don't get to change that. But it doesn't mean it matches up with who I feel like I am or anything. It's just right. what we need to is, and we'll never, I'm not trying to be negative, but maybe someday. Before Earth destroys itself,
okay.
humans might get to a higher level where we see people as entities. That you're a sentient being, and that's what I see as a sentient being,
yeah.
and whatever packaging is there. Because I'm really concerned about who you are as a sentient being, that person, your feelings, your ideas, your thoughts.
Yeah, I saw an interesting data point recently, and it said something that surprised me. It said by the year 2100.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 people on Earth will be black.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, we better get over ourselves.
Well, think about it. I have blue eyes. That's yeah. like, that's a recessive trait.
Yeah.
Pretty soon there will be no blue eyes.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. I
yeah.
know that. I recognize that.
Yeah.
And I only got them because of the Scottish background when they screwed around with the natives, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's all going to change.
Yeah.
So what we think we see as people or what's acceptable now is not going to be the same.
No, but the point is that it took somebody like Harvey Milk to make a stand, to create a possibility, to take action around that and to bring into reality, you know, a big shift in consciousness. 'Cause mm-hmm. what he did and when he did it made what he did profound.
Well, and I
because there was no chance it was going to happen.
No.
Right.
And he had to, you know, I got some of the personalities in the film where they were younger, much younger gay men that he was trying to solicit,
yeah.
probably in their 20s, let's say, who were, as they come into the lifestyle, they're like, no one gives a shit anyway, so fuck it. I'm just going to go do whatever. I'll go in another country or I'll just you know, be a male slut, which is, I'm not putting down sluts because I'm one, but the reality is they weren't worried about protecting or any concern at all about what
was
happening.
There was no concern. The one thing I was
right.
aware of when I moved to Seattle in the 70s,
yeah.
well, there were bathhouses in Seattle.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like very active.
Did they get closed or shut down when
AIDS? They shut down after AIDS, yeah.
Because of the rampant passing.
Yeah,
of that.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But if you think about it, we make this thing like, oh, there are bathhouses. Well, gee whiz, there have been bathhouses for centuries. Greece
yeah.
was full of them.
Roman too.
Yeah. So I just yeah. I think we're dealing with a new time with this virus.
Well,
and
I want to say one thing about that. It's been about, you know, 40 or 50 years since AIDS arrived.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't have a vaccine for AIDS.
I know.
Yeah. So the coronavirus is here. It's
a novel virus.
It's here. It's a novel virus. And we're going to be dealing with that. So I want to keep on track. I believe that there are way more people listening to gay, lesbian, trans, bisexual, and queer folk than they used to be.
And I think one of the things I got out of that too is at this point, because of the way it is more accepting, I'm not saying it's perfect, it's not where it should be, but it's accepting, you know. Because,
right.
You know, I too have family members who are gay.
Sure.
So the reality is with that, there a lot of us know someone, right? We intimately know someone.
That was something that Harvey Milk said to activate their political movement, right? Was everybody needs to come out now, because if you come out, then everybody knows somebody who's gay.
And so there's a affinity, whatever. We have a relation with the concept.
Yes.
One thing I think is important now is in any of these movements, Black Lives Matter, gay rights, pride, any of the other movements, what have you, you put your hat on it. You could be black and, of course, be supporting Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
But you can be white and support Black Lives Matter.
Sure.
Just like the gay movement. You don't have to be gay to support the gay movement.
Absolutely.
And the reality
yeah.
is that's where our next point of movement is going to happen. Is, yes, we need everyone who is gay or everyone who's black or whatever in those movements to be behind it. Because, yes, you need that. But we need everybody else to get on board, too.
Discrimination is something that runs very deep in this country.
Yeah.
So everybody needs to pick up a shovel.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone has to pick it up. And so if you see it like Melk did, anyone can see a possibility in these movements, a possibility, and nothing is out of the ordinary. And we'll probably review this later, but it brings me back to, we saw the movie V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
And I was moved in that movie because I actually did research afterwards of the masks, because I said, oh my God, that's what the Black Lives Matter needs is... We need to have some symbol that everyone puts it on and it gets rid of race, in a mass presentation of defiance. And then when I did research on that actual mask, that mask has been used all over the world for all kinds of protests.
And banned in a lot of places.
And banned in some countries, too, because of that. And so I'm not saying they're going to pick up that mask because that may not be what they want. For the movement, to label the movement. But I'm just saying something along those lines. Right now we're wearing masks with COVID. So what if everyone wore a black mask in the protest? I don't know, but there needs to be something that's unifying.
You're pointing out something that is that, you know, whether it's Black Lives Matter or whether it's Pride, that the people who aren't black who support the Black Lives Matter movement and the people who aren't gay who support Pride and everybody who supports... essentially civil rights needs to stand up and say no anymore. You know, there was a really interesting graph that I saw about just how the Black Lives Matter concept has been accepted, and it sort of goes along and it gradually increases in acceptance, and then with this last episode it just skyrockets, like 70% of the population are now there, which is amazing because 70% of Americans don't agree on anything. So I think you can look at characters like Harvey Milk, characters like Martin Luther King, you know, like characters like that are just, they're just individuals who have an impact.
Catalyst.
And I think that the important thing is that Harvey Milk wasn't anybody. Like you said, he was just an actuary in an insurance company. He wasn't anybody.
He wasn't a trained politician.
No.
He really was scared to come out.
Yeah.
But
what he did was he created a possibility and he took action against that possibility.
And he lived into it.
And he absolutely lived into
it. That was one of his things. He didn't just talk the talk and then not walk the walk.
Right.
When he decided to do that, then there were pictures of him openly gay. So they're causing a stir on the street, but they're making out in the street and things.
Yeah.
Yes, because they want to, but also to create a scene, but also... to not be embarrassed. There's no shame.
Not to be inauthentic.
No shame.
Right.
Shame is our number one thing because that aligns with fear.
Yeah.
And people use that. And so all of these movements and with Pride Month being here in our face, I just want to recognize Pride Month because I get that also we're dealing with COVID and Black Lives Matter and things that would normally be happening, which I was... truly excited to go be involved with, is be all these shows you could go see and parades you could go walk through. And I know there's been a few, but with COVID, it's keeping the masses out. And the reality is we haven't forgotten our brothers and sisters out there.
No.
The reality is they're very important, and their work they've done and continue to do is important.
For all of us.
For everybody. Because like they've said, if one person's discriminated against,
we're all discriminated.
We're all losing those powers.
Absolutely.
Whether we know it or not, we're all losing them.
Yeah. So I want to drink a toast to Harvey Milk.
Harvey Milk.
And recommend that you watch the movie.
Yes. Cheers.
I'm complete.
That's it for today. You can find us on your favorite podcast directory. We also have an RSS feed. If you're interested in online coaching for kinksters or online domination, you can visit our Patreon website at Lady Petra Playground. And if you're having comments or suggestions or drink ideas for our podcast, you can email me at ladypetraplayground@gmail.com.
That's it.
Cheers.